Heart. You gotta have heart. Miles and miles of heart.
What is heart? Heart is running through a return man when the game is on the line. Heart is giving everything you have in practice, day after day. Heart is finding the strength to run down the field one more time when you can barely breathe. The heart in me pumps Husker Red.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the Five Heart Podcast, brought to you by CornNation.com, hosted on JitteryMonkey.com, part of the Jittery Monkey family of podcasts. My name is Greg Mahochko, and joining me live from the 402. That's right? 402?
Oh, yeah. I'm not 531.
No. Haas Reuter is joining me once again, as always, really. And we're going to talk a little bit about this Wisconsin game that took place Saturday night. Haas, the game itself, I mean, outcome being what it was not what Husker fans wanted. I think, you know, when we're honest with ourselves, it's kind of what we expected. But at the same time, man, there's so much that happened in that game that, you know, both good and bad. But I came away from Saturday night, Camp Randall, with a lot more positives fresh on my mind than negatives.
Absolutely. As we were saying before we started recording, there's nothing that I was discouraged about last night. You know, defensively, we'll get to that conversation in a bit, but we put up the most yards, 518 total yards, that Wisconsin's given up in a regular season game since 2007. And they fielded some pretty damn good defenses in the past 11 or 12 seasons. So that's a huge, you know, accomplishment. And we got a glimpse of just how much of the real deal Adrian Martinez is going to be going up against a Badger defense that, while they're not the vintage Wisconsin units that they've had the past, you know, three or four seasons, they're still damn good. And I think you saw this team take another step in the right direction, at least on the offensive side of the ball.
It's funny, the way news broke last week, you know, we didn't talk really about any of the departures. But over the stretch of 5 days, Nebraska didn't have one loss, really three. Tyjon Lindsey left the program, you know, asked for and was granted his release from his scholarship. And then a couple days later, Greg Bell did the same thing. One of those really surprised me, and that was Greg Bell, because he was one of Scott Frost's first targets, you know, and first signees, you know, to the program when Scott Frost took over. And then I want to say this without, you know, slamming any of the players who have left, without, you know, sounding disrespectful. I've said it before, if you're 18, 19, 20, and you find maybe that where you're at's not the best fit for you, or you think the grass is greener somewhere else, you know, as far as schools and programs go, you know, good on you. I do feel, though, that this is getting almost surgical. And again, I say this, it's going to come out, the way I'm going to phrase it is not going to be how it's going to sound a lot more negative than I intend, but that, you know, as far as cutting out cancer, and I'm not saying these guys were, you know, problems in the locker room or on the program or anything like that, but you've got to remove
surgery's brutal.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to remove all the bad before the healing can begin. And again, I say that not to, you know, put down any of the guys who have left. But you know, you cut out a certain aspect and then the whole can get stronger. And that's the point that I'm, you know, trying to make. I could go, I'm going to stick with cancer. I was going to be like wart removal, but that seems too minor. Since we didn't really have a chance to talk about it, what's your take on the two departures last week, especially Greg Bell, since we heard about that one after we recorded our preview with Bucky's fifth quarter?
Well, I'll start with Tyjon Lindsey. That was almost expected from the minute that Riley was fired and Frost was hired. And then when you can, I don't mean to make light or, you know, trivialize the Rabdo situation back in January, but then you know, that adds to it. And then, you know, his best friend and roommate, Tristan Jebbia, transfers out. So it's just kind of a matter of time. And when guy's upset with his reps and, you know, he's talking to his position coach after the Troy game, you know, his position coach, Troy Walters, you know, he's wanting more, you know, opportunities to touch the football, but he's not really putting in the work, you know, in terms of blocking, you know, and we're not there, you know, on a daily basis, obviously, so we don't know what it's like behind the scenes, but in games, he's not doing the little things, you know, in order to get opportunities. You know, Troy Walters says, no block, no rock. You know, you don't block, you're not going to get the football. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of a matter of time, and it seemed a little premeditated, kind of, dare I say, surgical, in the sense that he transfers, you know, right after that four-game mark, and then he also transfers right before to Oregon State, right before their cutoff date on adding classes, October 7th. And so, you know, kind of feels like we're being a feeder system for Oregon State.
Yeah.
We've lost our highest, you know, top three highest rated commits out of the 2017 class to the Beavers, you know, Tristan Jebbia, Avery Roberts, and now Ty John Lindsay. And I don't want to get too who can spook conspiratorial here on everyone, but this is the same Oregon State program that was, you know, outed by Hawaii's head coach, Nick Rolovich, back in the spring for actively recruiting active players at Hawaii to transfer to Oregon State, going so far as to send them Oregon State letterhead correspondence to the Hawaii football offices. Rolovich tweeted it out, you know, and kind of outed Oregon State for that practice. And Oregon State, you know, I don't know if they responded or if they tried to cite ignorance, but it's kind of becoming a certain situation where it's irritating. And I don't want to say, like, I don't know if collusion would be the right word, but there's definitely, it feels like there's something underhanded. I'll leave it at that. I don't want to get too conspiratorial. But in terms of Greg Bell, I'm really shocked by that because, you know, he doesn't have the greatest straight line speed, but he's got, you know, elusiveness. He's got decent burst. He doesn't have good top end speed, though. And he looked like he had some of the critical factors of NFL tailbacks. And so, you know, he has that great performance against Colorado in the season opener despite the fumble. And then his carries start to diminish over time. Then you have the emergence of Divine Ozigbo against Purdue going for 170 yards. And then Greg Bell goes on to say to ESPN that he felt like he earned the job and it was taken away from him. Well, you're earning that job every day.
Right.
Just like Ryan Held said, you know, it's not bought, it's rented, and rent is due every day. That'll be an everyday MF for, you know, to get it done, to hold on to your damn job. Got to bring the juice on a daily basis. So when he says that, it's kind of like, well, yeah, you were named the starter. Divine Ozigbo begins to emerge. What are we supposed to do about a guy like Zig who works his ass off, doesn't complain, gets better? Are we supposed to say, oh, well, we named, yeah, we've always told you to work hard and, you know, you got to earn the job every day. But, you know, we named Greg Bell the starter back before the season started. So sorry. No. Like, football's a meritocracy.
Sure.
It's a what have you done for me lately? You know, sport, culture. So if Greg Bell wants to take his ball and go home because Divine Ozigbo outworked him, that's fine. But to do it on the day that you're flying out for a road game that you're heavy underdog against a division rival is irritating. And it's disrespectful to your teammates. Then it's disrespectful to your coaches. So it's just one of those adios, you know. Okay, you know, don't let the door hit you on the way out. Thanks for your time.
Is it fair to say, and I'm not smart enough, you know, as far as all the, rules and everything else, but is it fair to say that perhaps transfer rules in the NCAA make it too accommodating for the player to just be like, ah, no, I'm not happy here, I'm up and down. It used to be like you almost had to, at least maybe it's because I didn't pay attention. Maybe it's because I had no reason to pay attention. But you never heard of guys transferring, you know. What's the word I'm looking for? Willy-nilly. So, yeah, you know, whatever. You know, like I said before, you know, the grass is greener on the other side type of thing. What happened to the mentality of, you know what, I'm not the starter, but by God, you know, I'm gonna earn that spot. Is that, I don't want to blame a generation, you know, I don't want to be like, it's the participation trophy generation. I'm not saying that, but is there something about today's college student athlete that makes them feel, I don't know, entitled, or makes them feel like they are, you know, they don't have to work as hard as the next guy?
Well, you have to consider that college football is such a coaching-centric sport. Players come and go every 4 or 5 years. Coaches are there longer term. And so if a guy wants to, you know, if he feels like he's not being utilized or he's just not a good fit and he wants to move on, like, I think that restriction should be lessened on him being able to move on. That's why I think, you know, like the 4-game rule, you know, being able to play in 4 games and play in 4 games or less and preserve your redshirt is a great thing. But I definitely think that from a mental toughness standpoint, I think guys are taking the easy way out, especially in the case of, it's not like a guy like Greg Bell who's like, oh, I'm not a fit here. You know, they're switching offenses, or, you know, if there was culture shock going from being a San Diego kid to living in Lincoln, Nebraska, you know, he came here. He said he's going to outwork everybody and become the starter. And then, you know, he loses his job and he decides to go home. I mean, that's taking the easy way out. That's not a fit thing,
right?
You know, cultural or schematic. So I think that the unintended consequence of that 4-game rule has become that it makes it too easy for people just to pack it in and go where they find the grass to be greener.
And I'm glad you used the phrase mental toughness, because as soon as I turned the question over to you, that was the phrase that, you know, climbed into my head as well. It's just, I full disclosure, and I've said it before, I'm not, you know, entirely athletic. In fact, I'm not at all athletic, and I never have been. I knew my place on my baseball team in high school. Now, granted, it's a small town, small school. There were 82 kids in my graduating class. And even then, I was not the starter. I was not, you know, I was the 10-run kid. I played if we were up by 10. I played if we were down by 10. It's why, to this day, I'm still disappointed that they canceled the baseball game on my the night of my senior prom, because it was against the bigger and better school, and I would have had an opportunity to play. I'm like, hell with prom. I want to get in there when we're down 10, 15 runs and, you know, strike out or play left field or, you know, whatever, just be on the field. But I knew my role, and, you know, I tried to, as, you know, to the best of my ability, I practiced as hard as the other kids. I just was not as gifted, you know, athletically, physically, as even some of the underclassmen. I get it. You know, I was slower, I'm fatter, you know. Anyway, but I knew my role, and I accepted it. If you're a D1 scholarship football player, you have the ability. The coaches see something in you to, you know, beat anybody else out on that, you know, on that roster for that number one spot. You just have to put in the work. And, you know, like you said, if you don't want to put in the work or something like that, you know, if you feel slighted, it's a little bit easier now to, you know, take your ball and go home. So I think we spent enough time on that, probably more time than I anticipated. Let's now turn to Wisconsin, to camp around, because as we talked about at the onset of the show, there were plenty of positives. I want to start, I mean, let's face it, most of the positives took place on the offensive side of the ball. You want to start with number 2, or you want to start with number 10?
Let's start with number 2. He's the straw that stirs the drink.
All right. And that is, of course, 18-year-old true freshman Adrian Martinez, who just played lights out. I've said it. I said it after the Colorado game that Martinez to Spielman is something that I look forward to hearing for years to come. And I think after, you know, I'm already jumping to number 10, but we'll touch more on JD in a few minutes. But I think after Saturday night at Wisconsin, Big Ten opponents are realizing what we saw in that Colorado game and how special those two young men are and how dynamic they both can be. But you're right, Adrian Martinez, as the straw that stirs the drink, so to speak, was phenomenal. And I'm glad you shut me down, because I said something to you in a message during the game. I said, you know what, if Martinez was just a little bit more decisive, I think the offensive line would look a little bit better. And your response was?
Oh, man, I got to go find it now.
Oh, well, here, I'll find it for you, because I got it right here. Right. Your response was, here we go. I said, our O-line is not good enough for Martinez to be as indecisive as he is. And you responded with, Martinez is indecisive due to the OL, offensive line pressure compounds his decision-making. So, but still, Martinez racked up, yards through the air, on the ground. Throw me that number of how many he had.
I believe he had, I want to say, was it 370? Let me pull up the stats really quick, because I looked at him earlier this morning, and a lot of homework kind of got in the way of remembering things.
Well, while you do that, I can officially say that Nebraska put up 518 yards of offense against the Badgers, who were number 16 in the country. And while you're looking up the Martinez.
Here we go.
Okay.
Adrian threw for, oh, man, I don't want team stats. Come on.
Well, we know that he threw at least for 209 yards, because that's what J.D. Spielman finished with on just 9 catches. So when you do the math, that comes out to a pretty nice yards per catch average.
Yeah, Martinez was 24 of 42 for 384 yards and 2 touchdowns. So, that's a man's game.
Did get a little bit lucky on some of those passes that by all accounts should have been intercepted. Sailed a few, missed a few. I think, and again, he's 18, as the announcers Kevin Kugler and Jay Layman talked about, that I think Stanley Morgan mentioned that he learned just this past week just how young Adrian Martinez was. He's 18. He is half my age. So putting that in perspective, I was graduating high school when he was born, give or take, the time of the year. I'm class of 2000. But, he was, like you said, had a man's game. I think there were times where, the camera angle only shows you so much. It doesn't show you everything downfield. But it looked like there were times where, he was trying to look downfield for something that was open. And times like that, it just wish he would have tucked the ball and got, 4, 5, 6 yards. I think
it took him a little bit to settle into the flow of the game. He was a little frantic to start against Wisconsin. But once he settled in, it's a damn shame that we couldn't get some timely stops defensively, because this game could have been a much closer game and more of a shootout, had we been able to get some stops and keep the points down, for Wisconsin.
As we look, the Wisconsin, game day atmosphere is pretty intense. Everybody knows about the jump around, but, as Jake was telling us last week, the student section gets a little rowdy, and they shout obscenities to each other. From one part of the student section to the other. So a very unique game day atmosphere. When you look at what's left on the Nebraska schedule as far as away games, do you think that is going to be the toughest atmosphere that they're going to have to face on the road the remainder of the year?
Yeah, I think Wisconsin probably the toughest. Ohio State comes to mind just from the sheer numbers standpoint. Mm-hmm. You know, holding almost 100,000 people, if not over 100,000. I'm not quite sure what their capacity is. But then, you know, we got that big road game at Iowa on Black Friday. But as most people know, Iowa's always complained about that game because a lot of students go home for Thanksgiving and, you know, they're not there for it. So, okay. Iowa, I am playing the smallest violin in the world for you, Hawkeyes. Right. But, so I think Wisconsin's probably the most raucous environment that we'll see this year. And for an 18-year-old to walk in there and just kind of the gunslinger attitude, you know, let it rip, that spoke volumes. I mean, there were moments last night that, and I don't mean this is not hyperbole. If Adrian Martinez continues this progression that we've seen so far this season, I think it's a safe bet that he'll be in New York City at some point in his career for the Heisman ceremony. I mean, he might go down as our greatest quarterback of all time here, how he's playing as a true freshman.
Now, the question that I'm going to tack onto that, and I'm famous, dare I say infamous, for putting the cart before the horse. Do you think he's a 3-year player?
You know, I want to say just because of the style of scheme, you know, I know the spread has proliferated into the NFL, and as someone who watches a lot of the NFL, I love the fact that the spread has gained a foothold and just keeps growing each year. But I kind of go on the Baker Mayfield route of staying in college for 4 years, minus the whole transferring thing.
Yeah. Well, we hope. Knock on wood.
Oh, God. I would, if him or J.D. Spielman transferred, I would probably just, like, be in a depression for a few days.
I want to talk about Spielman, as I mentioned. You know, 9 catches for 209 yards, had the long 75-yard touchdown where, I mean, he just got out in space and Martinez found him and he was off to the races. Beauty, a thing to watch. Husker fans knew about Spielman last year and he has only gotten better. I feel, this might sound crazy, I feel a little bit bad for Stanley Morgan because... You know, he's the senior. He's supposed to be the, you know, the, I mean, he is a leader. He's a captain. And I think if you asked him, he would say, you know what, we just got to keep competing. You know, I think Morgan's a team guy. But, man, I feel bad that he's almost, you know, taking a backseat to Spielman. And then I look at the stats and look at what Spielman did, and I feel a lot better. So.
Yeah, and, you know, one thing. Sure, too, is they're such different receivers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they play the position so differently in terms of style. JD, while he's not, you know, doesn't have the straight line speed of a guy like Tyreek Hill, you know, there's some similarities between their game. Stan is more your possession receiver. He can make big plays, of course, but I think it's great to have, you know, JD continues to emerge from what he did last year because. There were points early last season, 17, when Stan was our only reliable target. And
sure.
Teams were just able to stifle the offense. And so when you consider all the different factors that we have, you know, you got a true dual threat quarterback, not a running back playing quarterback. We have a true dual threat quarterback. We have, you know, a guy in Ozigbo who can mash for tough yards in between the tackles. And then you got two really good receivers in Spielman and Stan on the perimeter. And then a decent tight end and Jack Stoll. That's a lot of matchups for a defense to account for. It's just a damn shame our offensive line isn't any better because if they were even just serviceable, this would be just a ridiculously difficult offense to stop. And yet, even with our shortcomings, Frost is finding a way to scheme guys open. To find running lanes for Ozigbo, to find running lanes on designed runs for Martinez. Like, there was a play last night where we lined up with trips way outside the hash mark, you know, and it was a designed quarterback run for Martinez, just a keep off the zone read. There was no read. Like, once he faked it to Ozigbo, he bent it back outside to be the lead blocker, and we picked up seven just like that. And I mean, we're finding ways to overcome shortcomings, but you can just imagine how much better it's going to be when we're serviceable up front.
Can I make what I think is a bold statement? And if it's too far out of line, I want you to, you know, smack me back into place. And this is also a homer statement at the college and professional levels. So take it with a grain of salt, you and everybody listening at home, at work, in the car, wherever they may be listening. You know who Stanley Morgan reminds me of, and I hope has as much success at the next level?
I'm going to say Antonio Brown.
I'm going to say Hines Ward.
I knew it was going to be a Steeler.
Was it the homer call I think Spielman's a little bit more of the Antonio Brown just as far as athletic ability, but Morgan, to me, has that kind of toughness, that kind of – and I'm not saying, obviously, Spielman or Antonio Brown don't, but has that, as you said, possession receiver kind of mentality. They're both about, you know, comparable in size. Morgan stands 6'1". Hines is 6 foot. Hines had a few more pounds on him in his playing days, about 210, but obviously, you know, get to the next level and Stanley Morgan's listed at 201, or at least according to Wikipedia. There's nothing. I mean, let's face it, Hines Ward is a Hall of Famer, you know, so that's, I don't think that's a knock on Stanley Morgan Jr. at all. I just think, you know, he could be that type of guy who, you know what, get you the may not, you know, lead the team in yards or receptions, but he's always going to be steady. He's always going to be reliable. I think the graphic that, you know, the Big Ten Network showed after he caught a pass last night was 30 plus, you know, games in a row with a reception for Stanley Morgan. That's almost unheard of. You know, so that's my basis of comparison. He's proven, you know, not just with Martinez or even Tanner Lee, but, you know, Tommy Armstrong as well, that, you know, he's a reliable set of hands for, you know, essentially three quarterbacks now. So, you know, I think that says a lot to him. And you know, he's got half a season plus here in Lincoln. But, man, I hope that a team at the next level recognizes that and, you know, gives him an opportunity. If it happens to be Pittsburgh, hey, that's great. I would love for a change for one of my beloved Huskers to become a beloved Steeler, because I'm tired of seeing them become Bengals or Patriots. Don't say a word, Hoss. Oh, yeah. So, you know, I would love for a Husker to turn into a Steeler. You know, we just got to wait. We got to wait till April for that one. But anyway, Stanley Morgan Jr., reliable as can be, a leader. I'm sure he was one of the players who, you know, talked to the team last week and, you know, started to you know, as Scott Frost said in the post-game comments, it was the best week of practice they've had. You know, the guys emerged as leaders, you know, and the ship's starting, you know, the ship is starting to ride its course, and as I think Frost said, the guys realize that they're close.
Definitely. I got that feeling, you know, as the game got over with last night, that we're getting closer to, you know, being really in a game. You know, we've had close games against Colorado and Troy, and Michigan's just damn good, and Purdue's a good team, but, you know, we're starting to grow up to the point of, you know, that game should have not ended at 42-28. It should have been, you know, a one-possession game or gone to overtime if we could execute a little bit better. The penalty discrepancy wasn't so steep. But after last night, I just kind of felt like we took another step forward in what the, you know, what the desired look of this team is going to be. When you put up that many yards on a Wisconsin defense that has eaten your lunch, on the offensive side of the ball the past three seasons. I mean, to do that, and some people might say, oh, you know, they'd called off the dogs as a garbage time. They had their starters in.
Yeah.
As long as we had our starters in. You know, they're still playing hard. They're still charging downhill like their hair was on fire. You know, Wisconsin's linebackers are still playing their balls off. So I don't want to hear the, you know, it was garbage time. We went out there and we were starting to execute. You know, it was a little too late, but, you know, Wisconsin, you know, they've got to be feeling like, wow, that offense, you know, next year is not going to be easy in Lincoln, Nebraska. You know, we'll continue to build each game going forward, with the exception of that Ohio State game, because we're not doing much against Ohio State. So just a word of caution to people out there who, after we win the next three, call them a shot now, might talk themselves into thinking that we can beat Ohio State in this year. But after last night, I just want to finish this thought up.
No, yeah, go for it.
After last night, I was thinking to myself, you know, we're 0-5, got six games left.
Seven.
And I was thinking about when we had that discussion with John Dam Johnson on Thursday night, and we were going through what games were winnable. It's not too far outside the realm possibility that we could finish 6-6 still. And some might think it's a fool's dream. Some might think it's a pipe dream, whatever axiom you want to use there. But you win, you know, you take care of business against Northwestern, and then you got Minnesota, Bethune-Cookman, Ohio State, Illinois, Michigan State, and Iowa. It would not shock me if that Iowa game comes down to bowl eligibility for us.
That's exactly, you know, a point that I made. You know, I thought during the game, you know, as I was as excited for a loss, you know, after Saturday night as could be, because, you know, like you, like Scott Frost, like anybody with a pair of eyes, I realized that, you know, the team's right there. You know, and we talked about the penalties and 10 penalties for 100 yards. That's, and some of them, you know, they might only register, you know, 10 yards, you know, from the spot of the foul type of thing. When you look at the kick return that I think it was Washington or Spielman. Anyway,
yeah, Mo had that bullshit block in the back penalty.
Wait, you know, and that, I mean, that really was more like a 55 or 60 yard penalty than a 10 yard penalty, but you know, the team is there. We clean up some of that stuff. Look, Wisconsin did what Wisconsin does to a lot of teams, and that was they got out early. You know, they took a lead early, and when Nebraska, I mean, I was encouraged as heck when they went down not once but twice, and defense held them to field goals, and I thought, okay, you know, I was joking in the Slack room. I said, all right, this is the time. This is the time we're going to march down, score, and we're not going to look back. And it didn't quite work that way. But then Wisconsin, again, what they do, what they're famous for, is they're going to run the ball. They're going to manage the clock. I've seen it, you know, we've all seen it before, and that's exactly what they did. I don't think Northwestern has the ability. Minnesota doesn't have the ability to necessarily do that. But you could tell middle of the third quarter and on that our defense was gassed. And it might have even been earlier. I mean, so there's more work to do, you know, in the weight room, you know, in strength and conditioning and cardio, things like that, to keep our boys from, you know, getting – and some of it's probably a depth issue as well. But I thought this towards the end of the game. I say, you know what? We're going to a bowl. I could foresee, you know, and this was before you mentioned it, but, yeah, I could foresee that the only loss left on our schedule is at Ohio State. And that's running down the same schedule. I'm not going to repeat the schedule. But those are all games that, in my opinion, are not just winnable, but should be won. And how sweet it would be on Friday, November 23rd, 11 o'clock kickoff, from Iowa City, Iowa. There are a few people who are going to get that joke.
My great-grandfather, that's how he said Iowa.
I only know that from watching The Music Man way back as a kid. And anyway, also on my Amazon Prime. Don't judge me. But that, and then you're going to have a team that started 0-5, who is now 5-6, on the verge, Haas, of a bowl game. You don't think they're going to come out day after Thanksgiving fired the hell up? I know they will be, because they will have turned their season around like that.
I could foresee that, you know, us coming out, you know, full of juice, you know, as the expression goes in football.
Some call it juice.
If that doesn't get your piss hot, I don't know what does. You know, the prospect of beating Iowa in Iowa City to go to a damn bowl.
Oh, I'm getting chills thinking about it.
You know, I want to say real quick, from time to time, I'm not saying I'm a soothsayer, because I'm not. I lack foresight at times, you know, more often than not. But back in like 05, I remember thinking that we were going to go into Boulder and beat Colorado 20-18. And that was the 30-3 game. It ended up being much better than 20-18. But I remember people thinking that I was just crazy for saying that. No, not going to happen. You know, today when I was thinking about some of the stuff that we need to talk about on the podcast, I just kind of had this like feeling like I could totally see Black Friday being, you know, one of those damn cold days where there's not a cloud in the sky. And I could just see that game going to overtime and Adrian Martinez putting the nail in the coffin in overtime on a quarterback dart up the middle to win something like, you know, 31-28, you know, maybe 35-31, something like that. And it just was like something just felt right about it.
There have been.
But maybe that's just being a homer.
There have been no less than three instances, and full disclosure, I don't think it's happened yet in a Husker game, but there have been no less than three instances where, watching my team, the Steelers, I have called out watching the game live, I'll make a statement to my friend who's there in person. I'd be like, you know what's going to happen now is a turnover. And I'll never forget the most joyous time that it happened for us was AFC Championship in 2009 against the Ravens when Troy Polamalu had the pick. And that solidified the Steelers' win. Of course, they all went on to win the Super Bowl. It was a magical time. So, of course, I say a lot of things, you know, in the Slack chat room, like, you know, we could really use now as a turnover, and then it doesn't happen, or it happens a quarter and a half later when it doesn't matter nearly as much. But I like the stance that you have taken. I hope that it doesn't go to overtime. I hope that Iowa is not.
Well, I want to blow them out. That's what I'm saying. I would love nothing more than for a dagger to be twisted on Iowa fans.
So let's talk about that Husker defense. Because I don't know if we expected more out of the defense, you know, from Eric Chenander's schemes or styles or coaching or personnel. You got guys who I truly believe are playing balls out, and it's not a knock on them. It's just, you know, they're just not there yet.
We're just not there yet. We're missing some key pieces. We don't have a pass rusher. We need some better downhill. Here's the thing. We need inside linebackers who are more downhill players, and we need outside linebackers who can cover, you know, drop into coverage, rush the passer, contain the run. We need cover corners. So a lot of our problems are athletes. We need key pieces.
Did you see
Chenander's defensive play calling has also hurt us at times. Like Alex Davis carrying a seam route from the slot receiver, you know, just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Did you see somebody on Twitter talking about personnel and such? I can't remember exactly who it was, and I'm not going to go, you know, give them. I'm not going to go look it up. I wish I could, you know, recall it quickly. But someone on Twitter after the game, or maybe this morning, said something like, you know what, looking at our offense, it's going to be fine. Let's use every available scholarship and bring in talent on the defensive side. great in theory, but I think we all know what happens when you let a position go a little unattended or neglected for a little while, and they don't have any depth at the damn position.
Yeah. I do think that this recruiting class, when it shakes out, both with the early signing period in December and then the regular one in February, I think it'll be very heavy with defensive players, you know, pass rushers and cover corners, as well as offensive linemen. You know, as far as linebackers go, we already have, you know, some nice pieces already committed. Nick Henrich, Jackson Hanna, and I'm drawing a blank on the last linebacker that we have committed.
The one from Scott's Bluff?
Yes, Garrett Nelson.
Thank you.
And
rep those in-state boys.
You got pieces there coming in, and so then it turns over into development. But right now, at UCF, just had a really weird hiccup. At UCF, Chenander's defense was not great. They were good enough, but they weren't great. But the thing was that the offensive firepower that UCF had, they could overcome any defensive gaffes. We're not there yet offensively, right. So every mistake is compounded a little bit more. So we've got some work to do defensively. I know a lot of people say, fire Chenander, you know, tar and feather him, you know, all that stuff. There'd be no logical point in firing him after year one. The only thing that you're doing is you're bringing in another DC, and some of these guys will be on their fourth defensive coordinator in 4 years.
Right.
So he'll get 2 years, you know, and I think you'll see a big jump from the defense in year two. And much like I think the offensive line will also be a lot more serviceable in year two. So just I don't believe in moral victories. I've always hated the notion of them. I think that at the end of the day, you either win or you lose. But I do believe in incremental improvement. And last night was another increment in our improvement. And so I don't feel bad about this one at all. I mean, I wish we would have gotten more stops. I wish we could have gotten a better push up front on the offensive line. But there was a lot of things to be encouraged about. So it's going to be interesting moving forward. I just wanted to mention watching Wisconsin's offensive line mow us down at the point of attack. I was very jealous. I mean, I was wincing and wanting to look away because it was so painful to watch. But from just a clinical football standpoint of being an O-line guy, it was, you know, like, wow, damn. You know, they were just mowing us down.
Let me ask you this, since we're talking about offensive line and recruits and such. It was, I don't know if announced, or it was at least stated that
Cam Jurgens?
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit.
My wish has come true.
All right, so let's talk about that. Because obviously he signed, you know, as a tight end, the Beatrice product. Let's talk a little bit about, especially why you say your wish has come true.
Well, you know, when I was at the coach's clinic in March of 2016, and I was having lunch with a friend of mine at Bison Witches. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Bison Witches. And having a few beers in between clinic sessions, and we were just talking recruiting and O-line personnel and stuff like that. And we got on the topic of Cam Jurgens. Well, at first it was the topic of the now departed, you know, he's not dead, but he left the program, Matt Snyder.
Oh, yeah.
And how, you know, he should develop into an offensive tackle, not a tight end. So we got in the conversation of how, like, Iowa always turns tight ends into really good offensive linemen. And so Cam Jurgens' name got brought up. And we were talking about how, you know, he might be a good tight end, but he could be a great offensive lineman with that kind of explosive athleticism. And he's already 270 pounds. And so we started talking about how footwork as a tight end, as a basketball player and a great track athlete, would translate over to offensive line play. And if he's got that big of a frame already, you can probably pack another 35, 40 pounds on him, get him up around 300 pounds. And then from there, it's just been looking at guys like Jason Kelsey for the Philadelphia Eagles, who was a high school tight end and played center in college and now look him in the NFL. He's one of the best centers in the league.
Sure.
And so that kind of – if you can get that kind of inherent natural athleticism and explosiveness, bulk a guy up and put him at that center position with as much as Frost to pull the center in this offense, we could have a Remington Award winner in Cam Jurgens.
That's a – I'm really glad that we took the conversation that way. You know what I like hearing from you, Haas? Is talking about all these young guys who, you know, obviously they need to continue their progression, their improvements, you know, doing everything right, did the little things right. But when you say we could have a Remington Award winner, when you talk about Adrian Martinez, be like, I could see him sitting in New York. That optimism, that type of hope needs to be heard by Husker Nation. It needs to put smiles on their faces. And people need to you know, pump the brakes on kicking everybody out of Lincoln, you know, so quick. And you know, we've said it all along. Scott Frost said it, you know. He said, hey, it's not going to be an overnight thing. And at the time, I think some people rolled their eyes like, oh, here we go. He's building himself in, a grace period. But, I mean, think about it. Think of everything that has happened since the end of November of 2017. Just, you know, when everybody thinks about immediately after that Iowa game and where we are now, we'll say 10.5 months later, you have had an insane amount of attrition. You have lost an entire staff, brought in an entire staff. You've also brought in some really great athletes and, you know, guys who want to play for Scott Frost. Everything is going to click. If people look at that second half of that Wisconsin game, especially on the – I tell you what, if you take the defensive side in the first half and especially how they were just able to, you know, hold a Wisconsin early to some field goals before they, you know, eventually got wore down, but you take the offensive side in what the offense was able to accomplish in the second half, when you combine those, you've got to see that the pieces are starting to come together. And if that doesn't get you excited as Husker fans – then you're cheering for the wrong team. If you just want to sit and be miserable all the time, I don't know, man. Go cheer for Iowa.
That's a miserable existence right there.
I'm telling you. So you can either have hope or not. And I'm going to be the hopeful guy. You know, I'm the eternal optimist. And this is, you know, I'm a Scott Frost ride or die. Die, right? How does that work?
Ride or die.
Okay. I'm old.
You got it right.
I wasn't sure. I'm glad you're here with your youthful knowledge to you know, correct me when I need correcting. But here's the thing, and we've said it before. If you run Scott Frost and company out of town, you're not getting anybody else. And the program will be stagnant, will remain stagnant, will remain irrelevant. If you let Scott Frost and company do their thing, as we're seeing, the pieces are starting to fall into place. The players are starting to get it. I have to. I'm not there, you know, at practices. I have to take, you know, Coach Frost at his word that this past week of practice was the best week that they've had. I have to, you know, take the players at their word that everybody's getting it, you know, quote unquote, and putting the pieces together. And then I have to see the product on Saturdays, and what I saw from Wisconsin left me highly encouraged for the future. It's still, you know, there's still going to be bumps in the road. We still have to go to Ohio State in a month. But I'm so encouraged that this team is going to go bowling after the 0-5 start. Nobody would have seen it coming. And you've heard it here. Haas and I believe that Iowa game is going to be the pinnacle of achievement for this Husker squad. It's going to be the game that gets them to bowl eligibility. And I don't know if you saw this in the Slack chat room, Haas, but I now have a deal with our very own Rick Cohn. And for every win that the Huskers get besides Bethune-Cookman, he is going to home make... freeze pack in dry ice and overnight me homemade runzas for every win.
Hell yes.
Every win. I thought we were just going to do like a runza, you know, like I said, I'll take that bet, you know, because, you know, if they don't get, you know, six more, it was just when we were talking specifically about bowl eligibility. And he must have not been feeling it Saturday night. He's like, I'll bet you a runza every game that you claim is a win that's not a win. I'm like, all right. I said, how much potentially or, you know, five runs is going to cost me? He's like, no. He said, I'll home make them, and I'll send them to you in December. Okay. Twist my arm a little bit more, Rick.
Well, Rick better get busy. He better get that apron on.
And I wonder if I can special order them. You know, be like, for one, let's do ground pork. For one, I want cheese. For one, I want special cheese. I don't know.
Beef cheek.
Yeah, there we go.
You ever have that?
What's that?
You ever have beef cheek?
Beef? No, that's not sounding familiar to me.
Oh, it's good. I had some beef cheek tacos down south of Omaha last week when I was down there. And, ooh, man, they were good.
I'm going to throw this one out at you. It's a weird one. It's not something I ever had, but my dad would, and that's pig's feet.
Pig's feet?
Yeah.
Never had them.
I haven't seen him make it in probably 20 years, which is probably good. It's probably why, you know, knock on wood, he's still with us and going to be with us for a long time, because it's not very healthy-looking meal. I'm going to have to ask my dad about that sometime. You just make it. You put it in a pie pan, and you cook it, but then you chill it. And I'm probably grossing some people out now. But I got to say, doesn't sound any more unappetizing than chili over a cinnamon roll, Hoss.
Oh, I was eating that last night.
And that's why we lost.
Oh, no. I mean, it's sad that the first time I ever had chili and cinnamon rolls was the Melvin Gordon 408 game.
And what did we learn from that experience, Hoss?
Well, I learned that chili and cinnamon rolls are very good. But, you know, every time I eat them, I think of Melvin Gordon running in the snow. Kind of feel like John Facenda from NFL film should be narrating that. Melvin Gordon running through the snow.
Well, in that
Ryan
case,
Hossreuter eating chili and cinnamon rolls.
I would think that because of that, you would not want to eat chili and cinnamon rolls.
Oh, I mean, I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious, so you know, I'm surprised I didn't develop an aversion to it as well. I wear the same hat. You know, I'll buy a hat every couple of seasons, and I'll wear it through every game, you know, until I decide to buy a new hat. And usually I buy a new hat before the first season of a new head coach, like I explained, you know, a while back on here. But I am not like Robert De Niro on Silver Linings Playbook superstitious.
I've got to say this just because it explains a lot between, you know, my fandom and my dad's not so fandom. I mean, he's not a Husker fan, but, you know, my wife worked Friday night, Saturday night. So she comes home Saturday morning, tired, wants to go to bed. I said, all right. I said, I'm going to take our son. I'm just going to take him out of the house so he's not running all around screaming. You can get some rest. So threw him in the van, took the van, and, you know, ran.
Man van.
What's that?
Man van.
That's right. And he was watching Cars or something like that in the backseat. He was happy as can be. Went through the car wash, went to the gas station, filled it up, went out to my folks' house. They're not home, so I text them, like, y'all aren't home. And my mom says, no, we're at, you know, your niece's last soccer game. I said, all right, I'm on my way. It's 10 minutes, you know, away. So I get over there. I'm wearing my only Husker T-shirt. It says Go Big Red on the front and big white letters on the back. It's a red T-shirt, but it got the Husker N on the back. And my son is wearing this awesome little Huskers jersey that my wife found for him, just his size. And my dad's like, oh, you're still wearing that shirt, huh? I was like, yeah, why wouldn't I? He's like, well, you know, they're not good. I said, that doesn't change my fandom any, Dad. I said, in fact, I ordered two more shirts this morning. So I've got two more Husker shirts coming. And, folks, when I get them, you will see them. I'll be brandishing them And we went after the soccer game. We went to this little country market and orchard called Eckert's. If you're in the Belleville, Illinois area, you probably know what it is. In fact, if you're in the Missouri or Illinois area, I saw a lot of license plates that were from out of state. They do, like, you can pick your own apples and, you know, go through the pumpkin patch and pick your own pumpkins and whatnot. Anyway, we're in the market part, and a lot of Husker fans, and a lot of them said, "Go Big Red." And one of them commented and complimented my boy's little jersey. So
is it the Lawrence Phillips jersey?
No, it just says it's like predominantly red with black sleeves, and they have the old Husker script on the sleeves, and it says it's got a number one on it.
Lawrence Phillips.
I mean, it's just a number. I don't know. I don't think it was. Yeah,
but every time I see the number one, I'm just like, Lawrence Phillips.
Gotcha. I was going to say, I think it's just, because he's number one in our hearts and our play and our programs and our hard toss. So I botched that completely. Anything else that you got? Like I said, we're highly encouraged moving forward. Northwestern's going to be tough/fun, and later this week we'll be talking with somebody from Northwestern's SBN site and getting a little insight into all the shenanigans that are taking place in Evanston, because there's always shenanigans. It's by Chicago, and they don't know anything but shenanigans in Chicago. So, Haas, anything else that you have for this episode?
Well, if we get a W on Saturday, and since I'll be in Evanston for the game, I'll probably get into some shenanigans myself. I'll probably eat enough Chicago-style pizza, eat my weight in it, and I'll probably drink enough beer to fill up Lake Michigan.
So Goose Island is a good beer that you could find up there. As far as Chicago-style pizza, it's good, but, man, it doesn't take much to fill you up. Just gonna say
I'm something of a pizza murderer. I've murdered many pizzas in my time, so let's see if I can get past three slices of deep dish.
It's pretty phenomenal stuff. I'll send you now. You're probably not going into downtown proper.
No, I'm staying in downtown.
Oh, okay. I'll send you some pizza places, because I know of a couple of good ones.
First time I've ever been to Chicago, so I'm looking forward to it.
I've been there twice, and those are both stories for off air.
All right.
So that'll do it for this episode of the Five Heart Podcast, everybody. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate you interacting with us on social media, be it Facebook or Twitter. Haas did have the reins a little bit. Just didn't see much from him on the old Twitter sphere on the Five Heart Podcast Twitter. Haas,
or my own, really.
What happened with there, buddy?
I was watching the game with a bunch of people and, talking about, strategy in between plays, and I totally forgot that I had access to the Five Heart one. I tweet a few things from my personal account, but it's locked. The joys of being a practicum teacher candidate.
Of course.
So I have to clean up the social media a little bit, a little peek behind the curtain to everyone. But, I'll tweet a lot from the Five Heart account when I'm in the city of Broad Shoulders on Saturday.
I can't wait. It's going to be so exciting. Yes, right. This upcoming weekend, Haas and I will be in the same state. And we'll be no closer to one another, theoretically, than we are when he's in Nebraska. I mean, yeah, there's a few hours less of a drive, but he's already said he's not driving this far south. He doesn't want to deal with the humidity, and quite frankly, I don't blame him. But that'll do it for this episode of the Five Heart Podcast. For my good friend, fellow Husker fan, and broadcast buddy, Haas Reuter, my name is Greg Mahochko. We enjoy and appreciate that you listen to the show, and hopefully you enjoy it, and share it on your social media so other people can find it and enjoy it as well. And we remind you this week and every week that Five Heart is all the heart you need. Go Big Red.
Win a damn game.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.